Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
Yes, we are in it now. It is sex therapy time. And as always, little ears warning with this one. But you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. Now, they do say opposites attract. They say that, don't they? But what happens if you start to doubt whether you have anything in common? I'm delighted to be joined by our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook. Good morning.
Hi, Jen. How's it going?
Good, good. So there's a lot in this and a lot of people have texted in. But what is the truth then? Do we tend to go for partners who are similar to us or do opposites attract more?
Oh, so the idea that opposites attract in relationships is a myth. In reality, most of us tend to be much more, not just attracted, but of course we can be attracted to people who are quite different to us or even very different. But in terms of successful, satisfying relationships, that tends to be with people who are more similar to us than different. Dozens of studies have shown this. So the idea that opposites attract is a total myth.
Wow. We should just call this Mythbusters because that's what you come out like. Soulmates. No, that's a myth. So why are we drawn to people who are very different to us at all?
Yeah. So, I mean, when it's new, right, perhaps that person, you know, represents something that is that you don't have as part of your personality or sort of forbidden to you. So it's very sort of enticing to see someone who might be much more extroverted if you're much more introverted, or maybe they have they're very intellectual and very kind of focused on that part of their life and you're more kind of hedonistic or into you know, having fun. You know, and then it might be just that they're from like a different class, a different culture, different kind of, yeah, level of education or something that is different than the kind of partner that your family expects you to be with, for example. That can be one. Sometimes it's simply that the physical chemistry, the sexual chemistry is off the charts, and so you kind of get blinded by that in the beginning when actually you're just not very compatible. So yeah. Really what happens is the ways that you're diametrically opposed tends to enhance the appeal in the beginning because they haven't, those differences haven't proven to be obstacles in the relationship yet. So it's exciting, but it doesn't tend to work out well in the longer run.
But it's weird because I would say me and Lau are very, very different. Like, he has patience. I don't have any. You know, he's very social. Sometimes I can be a bit antisocial. All that kind of. But does it just come down to core values then? If your core values are the same, then you have much, you have a better chance of it.
Yeah, I mean, that can be a big one. Core values is definitely a huge one. And a lot of people will find, even if they haven't sort of consciously discussed it with each other or even done kind of like tests to find out what their core values are, you will often find that people do happen to have, people in longer term satisfying relationships tend to have similar core values. Okay. But the thing is also that we can, you know, we're noticing the differences because we're neurologically wired to notice differences, you know, more than sameness in some ways. And so, you know, what you would be thinking as being very different between you and Lau, probably if you were sit down and really list it out, you'd find that there's actually a lot more similarities than differences, which yeah. is not to say there aren't differences, just that when you really look at the broad topics of sort of like background and your, you know, it could be like approach to money, approach to parenting, approach to sex. Of course, nobody's going to be exactly the same on these things, but they're overall more similar than different.
Yeah, that is true. How can people manage their manage aspects then of their relationship where they don't see eye to eye?
Oh, there's so much around this because first of all, I think you have to work out what they are because the, you know, the main topics of contention between people tend to be around sex, money and children. Mm-hmm. But then you have deeper than that, like they're the topics, they're kind of the content and how that comes out in people's lives. But then you've also got, as you said, like core values. Sometimes they're just very different and you're going to have a lot of trouble with that. Then you've got communication style and conflict style specifically, different personality traits, interests, and then also things like goals and lifestyle, like how you want to live your life. So there are loads and loads of ways to manage this, but doing things like understanding stuff like attachment styles and conflict styles, you can very easily Google that. There's loads of resources out there, podcasts, books, whatever, that can help a lot to understand better where each other is coming from. That even if you are overall quite similar, you might have a very different conflict style. You know, things like recognizing what needs you can get met in the relationship with that person, but not expecting them to meet every need, as we know well, Jen.
Yeah.
no way that a partner, one partner, can meet all of your physical, emotional, sexual, social, whatever else needs, and certainly over time. So being able to recognize that balance of like, sure, you don't want to have a partner where you're getting no needs met. Why would you bother? But they're definitely not going to meet all of them. So being able to like plan that out yourselves and together, how you can have that kind of like emotional connection and social connection with other people, being able to enjoy hobbies and time to yourself as well. Doing things like learning how to accept and tolerate disappointment. You are never going to find a partner who doesn't disappoint you sometimes and in certain ways. And then doing things like learning about nonviolent communication can be really useful. That's can help a lot of people with how they speak to each other, so that it just doesn't get anywhere near as sort of activated or triggering or passive aggressive or just openly aggressive. So that can help a lot. And not expecting your partners to be mind readers. You know, that's a huge one that we assume if we're in love with someone and we get on great with them generally, and, you know, we have such a great time together, and especially in the beginning, in the honeymoon period, where you feel like you're, you know, if you have that period that you can just feel like you're so lucky to have met this person and it's amazing. Most of us will then assume that that person is psychic and can read our minds and thinks about things and feels about things the same way as we do. So that's a good way to kind of build tolerance is, communicating.
It's a lot of work. Jesus, it's a lot of work, relationships, isn't it? But when is the point where you have to decide, or you decide to just call it a day with someone? You know, I think people who are maybe over 35 maybe would be more reluctant to do that, because they don't want to let go of someone and the fear of being alone or their biological clock or whatever. But when is the point where you have to go, no, that's it?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's going to be different for every couple, because there is no, it's not like there's a specific point, other than obviously if it has become, abusive or toxic to a degree,
yeah,
where, you know, you're just like having a terrible time, you've tried really hard, you're completely exhausted and it's not going anywhere. Even then, you could still decide to go to couples therapy first. But I think, you know, actually, people ideally don't wait until it gets really bad to go to couples therapy or to talk about these things, because, you know, you can absolutely preempt a lot of this stuff. But in terms of saying like, this is it, let's just go our separate ways, I think, you know, if you've noticed that there is a pattern of shady or deceitful communication and behavior, if you're finding the other person controlling, for some people, their partner being very moody can be a big one. And obviously, all of us have different moods, and it can be to do with hormones and stress at work and mental health related stuff, all sorts of things. But I know that some people, for instance, are just so much more activated by any sense that their partner is in a bad mood. So there's some degree of work that you can do on being able to be more okay and regulating yourself and soothing yourself if your partner is just a bit off. But, you know, for some people, that's going to be the point at which they say, look, it's not so much about the other person being wrong, just that you're not compatible. Then there can be other things like, you know, if a partner is unable to take any kind of criticism, you're going to really struggle. If they are nasty, you know, if they're regularly nasty towards you, if they don't take responsibility for their own feelings at all. Now, none of us is able to do that all of the time, but that can be a big one. And then looking into like major sort of like relationship research, a lot of it will say that when you have a consistent pattern of criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, which is silent treatment, and most importantly, or most damagingly, contempt in the relationship, which is like mocking each other in a nasty way, that you're, you know, you're just very likely to see an increasing decline over the relationship. So either you really sit down and decide to do things differently and go to couples therapy, or you call it a day.
Okay. How true is it that with the right person, you won't have to work hard to be happy? How true is that?
I think you can answer that one for me, Jen.
Well, do you know what? Honestly, Rachel, I would say, you know, you shouldn't have to. I remember someone, my sister, saying it shouldn't be this difficult. This was with my ex. And I was like, yeah, this is really difficult and hard to manage, and ended that relationship for the best. But I personally don't think it should be hard work and it should be that difficult.
I suppose it depends on the person again, because some people are going to be dealing with trauma, and also, you know, they'll have maybe like specific light setup, which could mean like massive, you know, stress around money, and like dealing with, you know, could be like taking care of a like a sick family member or something like that, where it's possible that there's just going to be a lot of extra stresses in life that mean that it's very like it's almost impossible for the relationship to feel very smooth and straightforward. You know, there's a lot to navigate with relationships, but absolutely at the same time, you know, none of us is obliged to be in a relationship.
Yeah,
we're seeing more and more that there is no reason to say till death do us part. Some people will still choose that for sure, but that, you know, this idea that relationships have to last forever, that or that you have to continue them, you know, either for fear of being alone or fear of not having things that you want in your life, that more and more people are recognizing that you don't have to go through that level of strife and stress, when you could be much happier, either on your own with someone else, or, you know, just sort of valuing other aspects of your relationships that aren't so much putting your sexual and romantic relationships at the top of the hierarchy. So, you know, I think the more that we can be like open and communicate with each other and learn better emotional skills and ways to communicate, generally it'll become clearer as to whether it's kind of a sad case of you're just not that compatible and off you go, but at least you know where you stand, or you kind of keep struggling on for potentially decades, mostly feeling, you know, like not great about the relationship and not great about yourself. So definitely don't need to do that.
When is couples therapy a good idea? I mean, do people tend to leave it till they're at a crisis point, or like when should they go, oh, because it's an awkward conversation, I suspect, to have with your partner, you know?
Yeah, it is an awkward conversation for most people. And I think we're normalizing it more and more, which I'm happy about. You know, I'm not saying that I think every couple should go to therapy. It can be expensive and time consuming. And, you know, it can be difficult to find the right therapist and sort of modality for you and scheduling and all of that. But definitely most people wait far too long. So they're already at like major crisis. You know, they're on the verge of breaking up. And that's much more difficult to work from, that kind of like crisis stage, you know, when you're in a state of emergency, and usually one or both people are very dysregulated. There's a lot of hair triggers in the relationship, and people are kind of shutting down and being defensive and you know, saying horrible things to each other,
yeah,
just to be engaging in that kind of, you know, pattern behavior. So I would say as soon as one person would like to go and thinks it would be helpful to have either a kind of a mediator or, you know, that sort of support, doesn't mean the other person is obliged to agree, but like certainly that we don't see anymore that therapy is only for people who are in major crisis, because, you know, that
that's
often
not the case.
It can end up being too late.
So where's good to go to learn more about having, you know, decent relationships?
Oh, Tinternet.
Tinternet.
Mean, unbelievable amounts these days. I've almost given up on even recommending specific podcasts and websites, because there's just so much out there, which of course can be like really hard to sift through. But I find that like even just a simple search these days, you know, on like relationship skills or relationship research, you'll find that like the Gottman Institute, they're the two of the Gottmans, they're a couple who have been researching for, I think, God, like 40 years now or something, a married couple, and they have specifically been writing books and doing research on relationships for that time. So they're great.
Okay.
And then Instagram is a fantastic place for just amazing content creators to learn about sex and relationships. So one that I follow a lot is called Your Diagnosis, which is Todd Barrett's. He's American, but his posts are great. And yeah, there's just loads.
There's loads. And then go to your Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end. You always post some lovely stuff and very informative
stuff.
Jen. Rachel, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week again in our sex and relationship therapy slot. Thanks for all your text messages. We covered a broad range of stuff. I hope we covered everything. But if there's anything you'd like Rachel to touch on specifically, email me jen@orshi.ie. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.